It's always good to be here. It's like coming home, even though I've never worshiped here. It's like my home congregation in many ways, because a lot of people, we worshiped together in Kirkland for so many years. See, what can I say? My wife's here, but she was feeling a little puny, and hopefully she'll be here at worship service, so she's sleeping it off or just at Oliver's house right now. Have you ever been invited over to someone's home because they just got back on a vacation and said, hey, I want to show you my home movies of our trip. And you go, oh, great. Have you ever done that? And it drones on and on. Well, you invited me, and this is the first time I've ever had to do something like this. It's kind of novel for me. I get to show you my home movies of my trip to Africa. So, and I think that's why you put me in the class time, because you have 35 minutes, then I have to quit. That was smart, because I might have went on for an hour. So, no, what we want to do is just introduce you in the morning class period about what is this culture like, and what are the people like, and what are some of the challenges. And then, as I understand, the format is then during the worship hour, we'll talk about the church and the spiritual efforts in Africa, all right? And then tonight, if you come back, I'll give a typical lesson that we would preach while we're there. And so I picked one out that I've spoken many times, and I think you'll get a feel for how worship services sometimes go there, because they're much, much different than sometimes what happens here. And I'll show why that's the case when we look at the logistics. But real quickly, we just got to understand, what is East Africa? Because a lot of times people say, well, you know, Africa's a continent, right? And it's made up of a lot of different nation states. So when you look at it, they break it up into different regions. There's six of them, or excuse me, five: north, south, west, east, and central. But Eastern Africa is about 13 nation states. And so, but yet when you look at it in this concept, we're going to look at just three of them, because these were a British settlements, and they were under the protection of Britain. And so in English, we often refer to East Africa as Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania, all right? They have actually an alliance with each other. So if you get a visa, say, to Uganda, you can go into any of the countries freely, all right? So it's sort of like the European community. It's that kind of thing. And so they're binding together economically as well. And so that's what we're talking about. Now, you have to get a feel for these three places and their size. And so what I want to do is compare them to your state, Washington State. So Washington State is about 71,000 square miles. Kenya is 3 times bigger than that, all right? You see that? So that's Washington State, obviously placed in the size. And so that gives you a feel for how big it is. It'd be like Oregon, Washington combined. But Washington State, if my numbers are correct, 7.5 million people, but Kenya has 53 million. So it's a lot more dense as far as population, and you see that when you're there. Similar with Uganda, it's only 1.3 times larger than the state of Washington, but it has almost 6.5 times more people, 45 million people, in pretty much the size of the state of Washington. Can you imagine that? You think the traffic's bad here. Well, it can get really horrendous in some of the places. Now, Tanzania, and you'll hear it pronounced Tanzania, Tanzania. So whatever you want to call it, it's fine with me, okay? It's about 5 times larger than the state of Washington, and really not much more population than Uganda, 59 million. But these states all have their unique challenges. Uganda has, I think, 69 different languages. And Tanzania has about 128. Now, some are fading. Some are hardly spoken ever. But there's still multiple languages. And so can you imagine the confusion that brings when you're going into a village? And now, luckily, English and Swahili is the official language in all three of these countries. But that doesn't mean everyone speaks it. In Uganda, they have a Ugandan tongue, and most everyone speaks that. And they will speak Swahili, some of them, but and then some speak some English. So obviously you have to have an interpreter everywhere you go, all right? And so have you ever felt like a true, I shouldn't ask this. Have you ever felt like a minority, though? Because now we have some people that are of different color, and you might say, well, I'd be right here in America. You know what it feels like to be a minority until you go to another place where you are truly the minority, and it gives you a lot more empathy of what's going on here locally. And I think that's what happens a lot when you travel and do this. You appreciate so much more. You have a better understanding and perspective of what's going on here. And everything, your whole attitude towards life changes. And we'll try to demonstrate that as we go through some of this. So there are some of the issues. Kenya, the major city is Nairobi. 20-hour flight, not too bad. 10 hours to Amsterdam, and then it's another flight direct to Nairobi. You don't want to be in Nairobi. Some of the worst traffic I've ever seen in my life. And then we've worked, and Oliver was with me when we were in Bungoma. I've been up here into the northern part, Nyeri Town. Somalia is up here in the north. And they come down sometimes, and the extreme Muslims will attack and kill, especially churches. And also along the coast, that happens here. But inland, it's generally really, 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 really safe. But do you remember the shopping mall in Nairobi, where they attacked it like some 3-4 years ago, and they held people hostage? Do you remember? That was in the news for a week or two. So there are exceptions to that, and so you have to watch out for it. In Kenya, down here south is the Masai Mara, and it's a huge game preserve that extends into Tanzania. And one of the wonders of the world, you ever heard of the great wildebeest migration? And it happens, you know, twice a year. Once when they go up when the rains come, and they cross the river in here, and there's millions of them. People will time their vacation just to hit that migration, but you don't know when they're going to go because God brings the rains and he's not on our timetable. Then they come back south later. But so tourism is a big, big part of Kenya's economy, as well as agricultural and other things as well. And so Uganda, Mbale is where we spend most of our time. Kampala is the city in the capital area. And you land in Entebbe. Do you remember, anyone watch the raid on Entebbe? You feel like you're landing in the airport, and you can see the bullet holes when it all took place. Remember when they rescued the Jewish hostages? And you get off the plane and walk into it's like a warehouse. You really realize you're in a third world country, and you're glad you're with someone, Bob Buchanan I travel with, and you feel safe because he knows what you're doing. But after you've done it enough times, it's no big deal. And, you just have to kind of just be vigilant. And if you're adventurous, and I guess I'm somewhat adventurous, like this is the greatest opportunity and blessing in the world. You can go see other lands and preach God's word at the same time. It doesn't get any better than that. And sometimes you see sights you would never, ever see. You have experiences you would never, ever experience. But all because of the opportunity to spread the gospel, all right? And we'll talk about that great opportunity, Lord willing, in the worship hour. But it's really, really exciting. And if you guys got any questions, just throw your hands up and we'll try to address them as we go on. Let's, real quickly, daily life. Here's a road, because when you look at this, can you see the people just as far as you can see? You know, they don't have cars like you and I do, obviously, because it's just too expensive. The poverty rate in Kenya, for example, is, I think, eighth in the world's most impoverished. And poverty rate is less than $2 a day to feed your family. And a lot of people, that's all they make is a couple dollars a day. And so you're not buying a car. And we have one fella, and I'll show a picture of him in a second. Oh, I need a car, because he takes a bus or a boat. Well, Henry, when we get you a car, then when you need new tires, we're going to have to buy you new tires because they can't afford that, right? Or the brakes go out and they can't afford to fix the brakes. That's not much to us, but to them, the car just sits there. So once you get them a car, you're on a permanent maintenance plan. You're supplying the maintenance, or else the car just sits there. That's how poor a lot of these people are, things we take for granted. But everyone walks. I mean, you're going down the highway, and there's people, and you got to honk all the time because just let them know that they're coming. Now, in the cities, it's just the same way. Bicycles are not just a matter of being environmentally green, like a lot of people are encouraging, which is fine. It's a necessity, and you ride bicycles, and then motorcycles probably the next popular means of transportation. Now, when you talk about bicycles, this place, I imagine in a lot of ways what the Garden of Eden was like, because when you talk about being a hunter-gatherer, what's a gatherer? Oh, look, there's a banana. Oh, here's a ripe papaya. And if you like avocados like I like them, there's avocados that are this big. And you can get four for them for a dollar, you know. But they're growing on trees around you. And so it reminds me perhaps what some of the Garden of Eden might have been like. It's really a jungle area. But if you want to get them to market, that's how you get them to market. This is how you transport. You don't carry them. You don't get a truck or anything. That's how you transport them. Look at this guy, you know. These are chicken boxes. That's a UPS delivery guy. So I'm just joking. This guy, can you imagine catching the wind? I was just waiting for him to fly off the back. But this is typical. It's not atypical. It's all around you. You'll see it. But it's the contrast between the modern and the old is just apparent because this guy's getting his lumber to market and barefoot and with his team. And you see often that. Now, the ladies are, they're British, these colonies were originally. So they're very British, very polite. You don't say, hey, how's it going? Hi, I'm Jack. How are you? And you have to say your name. How are you? And then it's very formal. And there's a politeness that really is lost in America a lot. But some of the formality goes too far, and we'll try to explain that. But she's sitting side saddle because you wouldn't sit any other way. And I wouldn't do that because I'd fall off. It takes a lot of grace and balance just to do that, doesn't it? But that's a typical a sight that you would see. And they just act like nothing's going on. And notice the guy carrying all that. Now, this is a boda boda. They're motorcycles, and they used to go from border to border. So they're boda bodas, boda to boda. And that's what they call them. They're a taxi. You know, you pay a bicycle guy for a taxi, but these are the motorized taxis. And the most I've ever saw, well here, notice the driver and an infant and then the child and the mother. That's four. I've seen five, and I can't remember if one was six or not, but that's not safe. A lot of accidents happen and injuries. The funniest thing is you're going down the road. A guy had a live pig on the gas tank, and the other guy behind him was holding a live pig between him and the driver, squealing. That's how they transport things. Can you imagine? So life is a little different that way. This is going across the border. Again, the same thing with pineapples. School's interesting. We were at this, Oliver was with me when we worshiped with him and I. We broke up our teams into two different places. This is in Uganda. And we met with this family and their church that meets at their place. And I was captured by, this is their school chalkboard outside. And there are some of the students. But look at this chalkboard when you look it up closely. Like, name one crop grown in swampy area. What would that be? Rice. And so this is an active, working chalkboard, but look how broken it up it is. And it has questions all the way across it. I'm sorry?
Looks like someone shot it.
Yeah, well, yeah, might have been. But most students, they dress up in uniforms, and it's just neat because every school has their own color. So these were purple, and they met in that school building behind it. But when they see a white man. You know, every country, it's a different name for a white man. But they yell out, white man, and they come see you because they're just enthralled. Some, I'll be teaching, and all of a sudden I feel this hand on my arm. Like, it's a little girl. She never touched hair on a white man. It's just, they've never seen one. Sometimes when they see you, they run and scream. Because can you imagine? You look like a ghost to them. Seriously. But in the cities, obviously, they've seen a lot more Caucasians than they would in some of the back village. But they always want to gather around and play with you. And that's Bob with the kids. And they're the cutest things in the world, these kids. They're just innocent. And they just want a life like yours and mine. They think like we do. They play like we do. They have ambitions like we do. They just don't always have the opportunities you and I have. That's the only difference. And here are the school uniforms. What I thought was interesting about this, notice their lack of shoes. And notice their favorite national sport. What is it? Yeah, football. Yeah, you call it soccer. It's football. Notice what their football is made out of. Can you see it? Right there. They take plastic bags and string them around and build up and make a football out of it. Because they don't have soccer balls. And we tried to bring some on our own and give them away. And it's like they just got the greatest gift in the world. A real soccer ball they could play with. But they don't let it stop them. You know, they do what they have to do. So it's interesting. Ugandan shilling, one U.S. dollars, 3,000 shillings. And so we were in Kampala, and we had to exchange our money from American into Ugandan. And we went to a money changer to get the best rate. And we come back with, I think it was like 13 million shillings. And like, we're rich people. But we're millionaires. But we had to go through this crazy city, and we're like four white guys. And everyone knows we just came from the money changer, and it's those times you feel you're watching your back, because there is, you know, theft, and I can just see Oliver getting knocked on the head and them taking his money, and I would just run. But but God's always been with us. Nothing's ever happened that way. But there's the pile on Oliver's money. We were in this one hotel. This is in Bungoma in Kenya. And I just had to take this picture, because where do they iron your sheets in your hotel? The man goes, they're killing the bed bugs. Like, oh, changes things real quickly, doesn't it? But they're the most hospitable people. And we were in Arusha, that's in Tanzania. And we had, you know, as much as we can carry in a suitcase that's legal on the plane. And they're big ones, and they have teacher materials and books, and they're heavy. And there was these two ladies, well, we got that. I said, no, we got it. And they insisted, and they were short, and they just hip, you know, lifting them over their shoulders and carried them up the flight of stairs. They'll do anything for you. That's just part of their nature. They're very hospitable and gracious that way. So these two ladies, we were going out down this dirt road to preach in a congregation that meets there. And we met them because we're waiting for a guy on a motorcycle to guide us in. And they come up, and they walk from back in there, and they were going into town. And it was several kilometers walk to get there just so they could sell these bananas. I don't remember what she had. So we're taking pictures, and sometimes they love having their pictures taken. Sometimes they're annoyed because they're not people in a zoo. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes Americans can be ugly and almost treat them like they're a curiosity. But if you ask first, they're generally really obliging. And then, so we start talking about them. So, yeah, I'll have to sit there in the market all day for 4 or 5 hours to sell those bananas. And then I'll have to walk all those kilometers back home and then do the laundry and then cook and do all those things. It's really, that's your day? Yeah. Walking, sitting, just to get maybe in our monetary value, $1 or $2. Well, we bought all our bananas. We bought everything in the basket, took it with us. And they said, well, thank you. We can go home and do the wash now. And it made their day. They didn't have to do that. Of course, we used them to eat during our classes. But it's just an experience like that. Notice this house back here. That's quite a place, isn't it? That's the exception. There is pockets of wealth, you know, in just like any other country, as you can imagine. So here's the Bungoma Church of Christ, and they meet in a schoolyard. And I'm just going to give you some pictures of the idea of where people meet. This is Henry. He's in Bungoma. We've worked with him, and his wife is often quite ill, but he speaks English every now and then. He'll call me in the States, and, you know, it's kind of a sketchy call as far as, you know, the connection. He goes, "Jack?" And I go, "Yes, is this Henry?" And he has a British accent, because a lot of them do. It's just really cute. And he just wants to talk, but he works hard, and here's the a church in northern Kenya. Well, from Bungoma, it's north. And notice we're meeting outside. And that's where I say we have to be prepared for things that are not typical here. Now, sometimes when it's really hot, and do you have AC in the building? Wouldn't it be nice to meet outside when it's just cool? It's, oh, no, we can't do that. Now, this is a necessity because they don't have a building. And then they meet under a tree. And there's something about that. You know, you're worshiping God or singing songs. And imagine singing "How Great Thou Art." And you're looking at the trees and the beauty. But you know what they want? A building. So they can get inside. So sometimes we want to get outside and they want to get inside. Well, why do they want to get inside? This is nice as long as it's not raining. And most of their huts, you'll see, are built up high because it floods all around them. But it's an experience you have to enjoy sometime, just to worship with a group like that. And they eat like we do, and they talk and visit. Notice the men, they being, again, a British former colony, they take, you know, civility very seriously, and the protocol is to dress up and wear a tie. Even though it's just really hot and you're sweating, that's what you do. And the kids are so well-behaved. Oh, this gentleman, I forget his name. But I wanted to show, this is their church building. These are sticks that we would use for starting a fire, wouldn't we? Or we just burn them in the brush fire. But these are the poles that they use. And then they put these cross sticks. Then they just pack clay in them. That's a typical building that you'll see in a lot of areas. And when am I done at 10:30? Is that right?
35.
Oh, good. See the handprints, the fingerprints on the mud? Can you see them in there? All those little, that's because it's pushed in. Dirt floor and handmade benches, and they'll sit there all day long listening. And they're just so glad to have you there teaching. And I sit on them while someone else teaching, and it hurts after a while, I'll be honest. And you have to stand up in the back and just stand there. But this is their life right there. Now, a lot of denominational money comes to Africa. And they'll build really nice buildings. And they'll have air conditioning and everything. And sometimes that's a problem, because how do we compete with them? Because they're attracting them to this nice air-conditioned building. And they say, we have to have a nice one too. And, of course, we're always trying to beat that message down. No, you don't compete with their building. We're competing with the truth, right? And but yet it is a real challenge. You have to understand these challenges that they face. And some of the places are not even as nice as this, but wonderful people. Just, you have to have the experience. And they all dress the best they can. They might have one nice outfit, but they'll go home and wash it and bring it back and wear it the next day. And it'll be clean and ironed. It's just, they take a lot of pride in themselves. And I just want you to be impressed with that, because I don't know why. That's an outhouse, by the way. Didn't need a roof, because you don't need a roof. So and the rain will wash it out, too. So that's actually a nice outhouse, by the way. So this is a lady who has a restaurant, and it's outside of a building, and she's just cooking over a little, is this one coal-fired? I think it is. So often they have propane, but she's making tortillas. They have another name for them. They're called The one you got sick off of. Oh, we always wanted to get them. What, you'll think of it and just yell it out. But it's outside, and the workers at noontime would come down there, and she would have her beans and rice, and it's outside. But here's typically the way a lot of them will cook. There's three stones, and you feed the long logs in from the side, and you have a big metal pot, and she's probably cooking ugali or something like that. But notice the other pots and everything. And they'll cook enough for 20, 30, 40, 50 people outside. And I don't say this with any, to impugn them or anything, but we camp better than they live. I mean, you get in your motorhome or your camp trailer, or even if you're backpacking, we recreate often better than they live. This is daily life. This is not exceptional. Now, even when in their city, sometimes they cook on a little stove outside like that. The one I saw showed you earlier. Here is a metal building that someone was able to build. We met in it. But the ladies are cooking outside just the same way. And when it comes to providing meat, they kill the goat. They do it right on site and butcher it and cook it for us there. It's because we're their guests. You know, they kill the fatted calf, if you would. And so this was Oliver's. He got the best piece. It's a fish head. You can ask him later if he was polite and ate it, or if Oliver was rude and gave it to someone else. What would you do? All right, so here was the hotel. We actually stayed in a hotel in Mabali. And remember that, because we're going to talk about Mabali in the morning worship. But this is outside the hotel. It's the same type of way of cooking. And do you guys have sound here on your PowerPoint? Do you? I have time. I think this is a video, if I remember. Oh, yeah. But, well, they don't need sound. That's one of the chefs. And he noticed he's in chef's garb, and often they wear chef's hat. But he's cooking just at an open fire like that. And that's very typical.
I eat at the table.
Oh, yeah, you do have sound. Very good. Just thought you would appreciate that. And this guy, Ronald, was our cook. And he's important. So remember his name, because we're going to come back to him in the next hour, Ronald. And a Christian, struggling, but a Christian. And he was our cook at this hotel in Mabali. And they love us when we're coming out. Here's a typical meal that you would take. The women eat separate. The men were invited with the guest. And so here the main meal is ugali. It's called different things in different countries. They have something similar to it in Ghana. It's called fufu, milli-milli, what's it called in Africa or South Africa? I forgot. But then rice is a staple. And then if they can kill a chicken, you'll get the skinny chicken legs and something like that to eat. And then they'll have sometimes greens, but notice the broth, because you dip this ugali, which is just cornmeal and maize. It's maize and maybe some cassava root and salt, and it's cooked a long time, and it's just gooey like, what's not oatmeal? What's the other one you used to have as a kid that you couldn't stand? Malt meal, yeah, something like that. And then you dip it in this broth, which is actually quite good. And you learn to just like, oh, this is great. And you eat with your hands mostly, okay? But this lady's cooking a chicken, and notice inside a building, this is her kitchen, same three stones, and then there is a pot, but that's how they, and if you go through a market, these are dried little fishlings, I made that word up, but I don't even know what they were, and notice these cans, would you use those? That's real typical through a market, because these are just like, you know, we might eat sardines, it's something like that, but you gotta love the kids. There's nothing like the experience being there, because anything you do, they're enthralled by it. And of course, Oliver's just a kid magnet. You know, they just love being around him because he's got that gentle presence about him. Here's a building we were teaching in, and it's long and skinny. Notice it's tin roof, and the rafters are just handmade out of long poles, right? So you could see making that on your own house, right? It's all handmade, and they pour the floor hand by buckets of concrete that they hand mix. The chairs are handmade. But kudos to you guys. We didn't destroy your independence by building it for you. And we'll talk about the problems that we face in Africa, and one of them is the influx of American money. Because out of our charity and compassion, we want to help, but we end up ruining things. And I'll try to describe that. They need to do it themselves. And they did here. I want you to notice the chalkboard up there. Because here's this British formality. It's the programma, or program. And so, Bible class, 1 hour. Wow. You guys need to catch on to that. Not that it's 35 minutes. Songs, 5 minutes. Now, I don't know if they held to that, because preacher, a half hour. He says, yes, cut him down, right? Giving, 1/6 of an hour. Lord's Supper, 1/6 hour. And then prayers, 2 minutes. You better stop after two. They have it just everything so formal. And so sometimes we arrive late, or everyone arrives late to the building, and we're already 90 minutes behind. And we want to get teaching because we have all day and we're already one class behind. And I said, can we skip the formality and the program? Forget the reception and the introduction and all that. So, oh no, we got to follow the program. And so we have another half hour of introducing the guests. And in America, we would just what? Get right to the teaching. But they're very, very formal. And it's to their credit, although sometimes it gets in problems. But and then, of course, they keep attendance and offering as well. I just wanted to share that with you. This church in Mumuyas, I forget the preacher's name, but they met in what really was a tire shop. Can you see all the tires? And there's a little room in the back, no light, and you had to open the door and read the Bible by the daylight because it's totally dark inside with no windows. But that's interesting because they have a new building. They take those tires and make sandals out of them. Those are tire treads with loops of tires for the sand to hold them, and they would sell them, and with all they made, that's what a lot of people wear for sandals. So they're retreads, right? And so they come up with a way what to do with used tires. All right, I got done with 2 minutes to spare. And there's so much more we could just say, but I just hope you get a taste for what their life is like. When I came back the first time, I felt guilty because we live in such wonderful houses. We eat abundance of food. We go to grocery store, and if they walked through, they wouldn't believe what's there. But then after I processed a lot of that and come back a second or third, I don't feel guilty. I feel grateful. Thank you, Lord. And also I felt responsible. I'm going to use this to your glory because I might have it today, but I might not have it tomorrow. We can share it with others. We can enjoy it but my life isn't built on what I have, because they often are much more happier than Americans. And you'll see it in the next hour, the smile on their face and the genuine happiness that they have, even though they live without what we have. And there's a lesson to be learned. And that's going to be really one of the things I want to emphasize is y'all need to go somewhere, whether it's the Philippines, Africa, Costa Rica, it'll change you for the better. And probably we'll be better, grateful, and more faithful stewards for God. All right, any questions? All right, thank you.